Hello, you're listening to the Otaku Spirit Anime Cast. My name is Andrew, and I'm joined here with Chris.
Yo!
Today's episode is a podcast on character building. Yes, we're from otakuspirit.com. You can go there for all of our anime, new and old. Great community in the forum links at the top. Social media links on the right side and all that good stuff. And yes, so this is kind of a... This is a brain dump that kind of hit me after I watched Sirius the Jaeger. Not Sirius the Jaeger. Similar show. Fairy Gone. After I watched Fairy Gone... I think in that particular review, I kind of discussed the idea that, you know, this is a show that has characters that are already matured. A lot of the characters seem like they've already kind of established themselves, save for, like, one character. It seemed like everybody had a point that they got to before the show even began, and it was kind of following their story at that present time. And a lot of the, if you would say there's any kind of character building, it was kind of done in the past. You know, they had their usual backstories for a few characters, and that's where you really did kind of see how they got to how they are now. I mean, the main hero, not heroine, the main guy in the show, he pretty much has a brief little flashback of the first episode, so you get an idea of where he kind of came from. So the thought kind of crossed my head, and me and Chris have discussed several times before this idea of, typically, when a show has, you know, really great characters and character building, Chris really does attach to it. Whereas if a show has, you know, more world character, not so much the characters themselves having much to them, I kind of get drawn to it. We both, that crosses, of course. It's not like I don't like shows that have great characters, and it's not like Chris doesn't like shows that have intrigue. I mean, he loves Made in Abyss, and that literally the world is the character. For me, I loved, you know, Nananbiori, which is just nothing but characters. So it's not that we're like, you know, one side or the other, black or white. It's just more of a thing of there are certain things that we find more intriguing than the other when the other might not so much. So it's kind of an interesting idea. And so there was kind of those two elements that kind of crossed that made me kind of really start thinking into this idea of what makes a world kind of grow, what makes a character kind of grow. Certain elements within it that we kind of see as a trend. So I thought that was kind of an interesting topic to kind of dive into.
One of the most interesting things when I was reading through Andrew's outlines, I got to this particular section where he points out the idea of us both and how we talk back and forth about the idea of world versus character and all that stuff. And the best way I've ever kind of in my head put it together was, You need both the canvas and the paints to make a painting. You if you don't have a canvas, you can't put the paint anywhere, and you can't put the paint anywhere if you don't have a canvas. You need them both to have a good story in general. So that's the best way I was ever able to put it. And yes, you can have nuanced paint just as much as you can have a fancy border and a really intricate canvas. You can have both of them.
So you go to the extremes on that one. My mentality with that analogy is more, you can either make a landscape painting or you can make a painting of a person, a portrait picture. But it's usually whenever you combine the two of them that you create a masterpiece. Boom. Boom.
I was thinking more along the lines of the world is the canvas and the paints are the characters, because you know the more intricate a world is, the more fascinating things that the characters can do in that world. The more intricate the characters are, the more you can see the intricacies of the world. Either way, both of them enhance each other.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that really kind of makes a really kind of standout show is when you do have a show that has both the characters and the world as a character that completely mesh with each other. The characters develop in that world that is very fascinating, so mm-hmm. to speak. I think we're pretty much buttoning up the entire podcast, so hopefully there's some more here. but yeah, this is... let me find out exactly where we've gotten in this already. So yeah, basically it was kind of formed based on the discussion about characters that are kind of fully matured, shows that rely on the world and minor character developments to shape its narrative. This sparked a rabbit hole in my head, kind of the old age-old discussion about world versus characters. I'd argue that they're both the same, Either the world has characters that grab you and evolve, or characters are in the world to be developed. This is a storytelling element that really centers around many stories that cannot be ignored. Either capture the audience immediately with characters, with personalities or quirks about them. Pretty much see anything by Kyoto Animation. I know some people would argue that, argue against that, but for us personally, pretty much any Kyoto Animation show, the moment you fire it on, unless you have a, you know, distinct distaste for anything that is cute, you're probably going to attach to the characters right off the bat. I mean, that's completely discounting the fact that there's a lot of shows that Kyoto Animation has done that aren't cutesy characters, you know, Silent Voice, stuff like that, that's more mature. Their ability to grab you with a character that has either personality or immediate sign of something intriguing is their staple, basically. Comedies or shows featuring children or teens, those are often kind of more immediate kind of grabs with quirks and whatnot. It's not always the case, though, as some adult shows, not Moe, have characters that grab you, like most people would probably point to Spike Spiegel from Cowboy Bebop. He kind of had a very unique personality to himself, and the way that he kind of carried himself was essentially why Cowboy Bebop was as popular as it was. And of course, on the opposite spectrum, like again, the side that I'm usually on, there's worlds that is the character that grabs you with questions that you want to answer. That's like Kato the Right Answer, From the New World, Renmei. They're all shows that kind of are in a not necessarily the world itself, but there's rules about it that immediately grab you. Kato the Right Answer, it starts off right off the bat with a big, huge cube appearing in the middle of the city, and an alien shows up and says, I have these things that we want to bring to your world. Do you want them? And you're immediately going, or at least I was anyways, immediately going, okay, what is this going to do to people? Like, what is this going to unlock within humanity that's going to change it completely? From the New World, it seemed very fantasy-based. You kind of get a quick glimpse right at the very beginning that it was kind of from a modern world, but then how did it get to this one location? Diving into the secrets of that world was very fascinating. And, of course, how about Renmei, which is kind of one of those girl seems to fall from the sky, then birthed out of an egg. Where is she at? What is this place? Was a very fascinating world that you kind of want to dive into. But again, I would argue that From the New World and How About a Mermaid are two examples of ones that have both the same elements, character and world character. I need to make a better term because I say world character and character. World character and personal character? Character.
I just stick with the world and characters.
World and character. Okay, I'll go with you on that one. Any additional points that you'd make to those ones?
No, I think you pretty much captured it pretty well. I mean, it does really center around the idea of the characters. Do you want to follow the story with those characters, or does the world give you present you with a interesting enough of a question to want to actually delve into that world? Both of them have their own merits.
I'm stuck on calling world a character. All right, so diving into like the essential aspects of what makes world or characters kind of building intriguing. Often characters that are still being molded, being put through change or existing. And that's what I was kind of pointing out. I struggle with some shows where, again, unless the world itself has character, like Cut All the Right Answers is a perfect example, and I love that show to death. I loved it to death. I mean, I think I put it in my top of the decade. It's a show that grabbed me with the intrigue of the world. That show did not have actual characters, they were fully adult. They've fully matured. They've made their decisions on how they want to live life. They're already molded. They're now a statue, and they've already made up their mind. Yeah, technically, they make certain decisions that may surprise you a little bit, but you pretty much gather that from the first episode that the same character they were in the last episode. Just they've done some stuff. They've been through stuff. And that's kind of the interesting thing there.
That's that's one of the things that I was kind of jumbling around in my head is how does naivete how does that kind of fit into this discussion? And in a lot of cases, when you get most anime are centered around younger characters, and those younger characters do have that naive way of looking at the world, and that's kind of the main faculty that makes you kind of more you tend to embrace that character more, because you can kind of understand where, like we've discussed before, in the idea of how do you make a character bond. How do you create that? What did we call it?
Familiarity.
The familiarity where you're actually
relate to them.
Relation where you're actually able to relate to that character. The less kind of walls between you and that character, the quicker you will be able to fall in line and understand that character's thinking when they go into whatever it is that they're planning on doing. Naivete is one of those features of a character that will help you, because you're going into it going, what the heck is going on? That character is doing the same thing. They're going, I don't understand this. Why is this in front of me right now? And that helps you embrace what they're dealing with.
And I think that we kind of discussed that. I don't know if it was in the writing tools or maybe the archetypes. It's just this idea that why is there so many school anime? Why is there so many children anime? It's just because they are a blank canvas. They are a blank canvas that is it's easy. You might argue that it's easier to write on a blank canvas versus taking a portrait that's already drawn and maybe touching it up and trying to change something in it or completely paint over it with a new concept but still retain its original form. Those are things that are a lot more difficult to do, but at the same time, they're also easier for you to connect to because, I can connect to a school kid because I was once a school kid, so I understand what they're going through. Whereas I don't understand... Again, I'm going to keep throwing Kyle the Right Answer under the bus here, even though, again, I love it. I don't know. I'm not a detective. Babylon. I'm not a detective. I don't know what goes through his mind. I can't relate to that person. Now, I can relate to him when suddenly he realizes somebody's going to get harmed, and I want him to, succeed in saving that person. But the thing with Kato is it wasn't about me connecting with that show for the characters. Now, the way that I was able to really get myself into that show was more because it was believable, even though it was aliens showing up and offering technology. It was so well put together that I felt like I was in there. In my own mind, I was thinking, would I watch them reveal this thing that's going to change humanity? Or would I DVR it and wait for somebody else to tell me it was okay? those were the things that grabbed me. So... with character building, it's so much more easier when you have somebody that is young and experiencing things for the first time that you as a viewer have experienced, or maybe just partly experienced, or maybe would understand. I mean, not everybody goes through, say, Truck-kun hitting a mom, but some might, and I apologize for that, but there you can relate to loss, so you can still make that connection.
They also have some of the most... greatest potential for growth, like Andrew was kind of mentioning, with the idea of a character that is an adult tends to not change as much. They can. That's not saying they can't change. It's just that youth, like I had mentioned with the naivete, and Andrew was mentioning the blank canvas, they have the most potential of growth. They don't have things that are in their past as often that will prevent them from shifting the way that they look at things.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's just a thing of life, and often younger people don't really understand it, but older people are set in their ways usually through trial and error they've gone through, and so they're a little more stubborn about changing things just because they feel like they've tried, or they feel like they've gone through that, or they've done the trial and error, or they just kind of stuck in their ways. And so it's a little more harder to write a story about somebody that is, say, 50 years old, suddenly changing the way they see things. Randomly popped in my head, but Inuyashiki, you have this character that is really old. What was he like? He wasn't actually that old. He was just he had an illness and he was going to die, but he looked like he was an old man. But he was set in his ways that he wanted to protect things, and so that's what he was going to do. He had a very kind of kind heart, and that's what he was going to do. He never really, even though he went through so much crap and saw so many horrible things, he was still had this heart of gold that he wanted to protect people. Whereas I think the other character was technically the other example, a character that could be very molded, seeing the way that he didn't like things and just constantly, you know, going down this one path of, you know, I guess degradation, you know, going down this dark hole that keeps going further and further down. Bung. 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 That was weird. Anyways, so yeah, good examples of shows with characters that are kind of being molded is like Clannad, Shirogen Roku Rakusenju, A Silent Voice, My Teen Romantic Comedy Snafu. They're all shows that have that kind of dynamic of character. And even with Shirogen Roku Rakusenju is not necessarily a show that has young characters. So it's kind of got a good gauge of different age groups there. Shows that have environmental changes. So you have an environment that changes the characters themselves, whereas, like, you know, insert any isekai. Not really any isekai, because there's a lot of isekais that have characters that don't seem like they have much change to them when they go into the world, but it's often a main feature of those where you're a fish out of water and that element kind of makes change in you. Grimgar Fantasy and Ash was, I think, a pinnacle example of that. ReZero, I think, is a pretty good one as well. You can probably argue it, but the old ex-girlfriend Sword Art Online, characters being thrown in a very kind of, well, they're not necessarily thrown in there. They decide to go there, but then they're kind of trapped there. Same with Overlord, seeing change to that whole environment. Overlord is a very good example of that. I've kind of chimed that several times on our podcast, but it's kind of a story about it's odd because the story about being trapped in a video game, and at face value, it just seems kind of like, okay, he's just a big skeleton man. But I think the thing, like I've mentioned before, is that grabbed me was that at some point he starts realizing that he's not feeling the same human emotions that he did before. So he's kind of becoming this overlord. He's becoming this skeleton demon thing that everybody fears in that world. He's no longer the player. He's becoming the actual character, which is kind of fascinating. Any other isekais you would think of that add in there? I know this. I made this outline a while back, so
I guess you could add the Shield Heroes and slime, but they didn't do as much as those ones that you've got there. So
I would say that Shield Heroes is a good example of that. He definitely seems like he changes a lot when he goes to that world. Slime, I don't know. I mean, yeah, he's definitely different than what he was in the world prior. He kind of becomes this, so to speak, a king of a nation. So it definitely is different than him. Well, he's a salaryman, I think, or is an architect.
Salaryman.
Salaryman?
No, I think he was an architect.
He was talking about being an architect.
He was an architect. No, you're right. Shield Hero,
he was kind of a jerk before, though. But we only got a quick snippet of it.
But he was also a consequence of his experiences. So he was kind of forced to change, and he did do a lot of changing. Even though, yeah, like you were saying, he was a jerk before, and then he just became more of a jerk because of the experiences he went through. But yeah, he did have a lot of change based on his the environment change.
Yeah. Non-isekai environmental change character building is Grave of the Fireflies, of course, a movie about World War II and kind of the citizens within that world, namely a kid and his little sister kind of being thrown into chaos in this corner of the world. Another World War II type story, girl being married into another family and then going through those events. Hanasaki Roha, kind of a similar thing. Girl going to a completely different location, out of the big city into the kind of the sticks and how that changes her. Noragami, girl kind of thrown into the battle between, you know, our world and the gods. Monogatari series. That. Everything about that. Essentially a person that's being involved with different types of monsters and beings. So Kokoro Connect. Again, I don't know if that's necessarily environmental change, but it's just kind of an unknown being that is manipulating them and how it changes them. Really good character study, by the way. If you're looking for character build and character study, I think Kokoro Connect is kind of a gem that, yeah, I heard a lot of people talk about it, but not enough, I think. Alone in the Sea, yeah, fish people going on the land and people, you know, being in involvement with them. Madoka Magica, girl becoming magical girl, and how that kind of changes them because it's a very dark show, so it's not the usual magical girl. So, anything else environmental change?
In theory, Evangelion.
Yeah.
Granted, you don't see him before he comes to Neo Tokyo. Is it Neo Tokyo?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he's technically coming from somewhere into that place, and then he gets dragged into Nerve.
Forced to pilot the mecha.
Yeah, get in the mecha.
Get in the damn Eva.
Yeah, those are the ones that... I guess Outbreak Company, but that's technically an isekai, so...
Made in the Abyss. Traveling into the Abyss, where everything's very foreign and everything's kind of unknown and dangerous, so... Discovering what is in that world and how that might change the characters. Shows with external stress placed on the character within their world. Erased. You have a character that is kind of... has a way of seeing deja vu. And eventually it kind of forces him all the way back to his childhood. Just kind of solve a murder that kind of happened. Promised Neverland. Just watch the first episode. I'm not going to spoil things. Mardok Scramble. Yeah, I'm kind of trying to remember exactly why. It essentially is a girl that gets killed and then goes and gets revenge. So I guess that's the external stress that's placed upon her that changes her a lot. Very graphic. Wolf Children. Girl meets wolf boy and then has a family and then has to kind of completely change her life just to kind of support those children. I guess the external stress there would be the child protection services.
world.
Bunny Drop, I think I put that there mainly, and it might have been the same reason I put Wolf Children in there, is kind of that element of the external stress, not necessarily a bad stress, but the external stress being childhood or having children that you have to take care of. With Bunny Drop, you do have a older gentleman that is essentially having to take on this girl and take care of her, and how that kind of changes his life completely and changes him as a character too. And then just character development based on just existing. A lot of slice of lives are that way. Not so much the heavy drama-based slice of lives, but more the standard slice of lives. A lot of comedies are that way. Something like Nanbiori is a good example of those, where they technically do have developments in the characters, but it's really just kind of them existing. So, anything else? You think of anything else that would affect character change? Besides those bullet points?
No, I think that captures it pretty well. Having something force a change is usually one of the better ways, especially when a character is more rigid about something, some kind of a change that they don't want to do, but them being forced to change is one of the best things about character development that you can do is having them fight that change because they don't want to change. People don't like change. So it is kind of fun to see that when a character is dealing with that.
Yeah, I think that's a really good one. And I still need to get back to NHK, but I think that's from what I've watched is kind of the concept of that one. Characters that are kind of either somebody is trying to pull them out of their shell. Maybe it's somebody that just, you know, has a love for them. I mean, we have that recently with Sing Yesterday for Me. It seems like a show that really does feel like a character is kind of stuck in a place and these two love interests involved with him are kind of making him think about changing his life. I mean, he has his past love that he runs into, and he thinks he's a complete loser because he works at a convenience store. But his desire to actually, okay, I need to get into a real job, and he starts looking at photography and stuff, that it kind of makes him move. I think it's an excellent way of kind of building up a character, is you have, I guess, a goal in mind. You don't really get to see too much with Wolf Children, but you do have a mother there that she has to learn a lot of things. She has to learn how to, you know, till up a field and grow plants and clean and take care of an old house. And these are all things that are kind of forced upon her to actually try to fix, an obligation for her to seek to learn things just to kind of fix the situation that she's in. So it's really cool. It's really cool. Really cool. So building the character of the world. Again, the character of the world. Often using intrigue, mechanics, or politics to kind of bring in the viewer. Shows that kind of have intrigue to kind of build that, which is basically kind of requiring them to hold their cards and slowly reveal these elements bit by bit to kind of grab the attention of the viewer, reader, I guess, and really kind of suck them into that world and slowly reveal those things is kind of the important thing. Again, bringing up Paibana Rime again from the New World. Made in the Abyss, we kind of mentioned that before. Land of Lustrous was kind of... Land of Lustrous is interesting because I don't think it really gets to that point until way late in it. I mean, there is an element early on where you're kind of like, yeah, you have a lot of cards to show, don't you? And then a little bit later, you're like, you're going to show those cards eventually, aren't you? Because I really don't know what's going on right now. There's these weird angelic beings that show up every now and then. Everybody has crystals, hair,
well, yeah,
and I don't really know why they're there or what they're fighting or... Yeah,
that's that. What I was going to bring up was a lot of your epics, your Naruto's, your Dragon Ball Z, your Bleach. A lot of those shows tend to have a lot of this in spades, where they just have every time you turn the page, you end up finding out there's something more to this world than. And that opens up a whole nother thing. And factions being one of those by far. Land of the Lustrous, you get 5 or 6 episodes in and you're starting to finally realize, okay, there's a second faction. But oh, wait, there might actually be a third faction. Wait a second. Where did this come from? So, yeah, it Land of the Lustrous was... a fascinating one on that one.
Yeah, and I kind of agree with you on the shonens, but I think, of course, with shonens, they're technically both character and world.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I still think back to the early days of watching Naruto, and I was like, it's getting into all these different villages, and I'm going, holy crap, I want to learn about all these different villages and what the characters are with them. And, oh, yeah, by the way, they're bringing one of those villages in, and now you get to meet the characters of that village, and they kind of have a different element to it and style to them. It was really, really fascinating, even though... You know, I did drop off eventually at some point with that series. That was a thing that was fascinating. And again, it also had politics within there and mechanics and all these things being revealed to you in such a vast array of characters that all have their own character builds and their own story arcs to go with them. That is, I think, one of the prime, I guess, elements to shonens that make them make or break. I mean... With My Hero Academia, it's another example of that one, just having really good characters that, and so many really good characters that all mixed in that element. And if they can drive those characters to you and make you actually like every single one of them that shows up on the screen, it's a sign of a good writer. So
yeah, motivations, counter motivations, all that stuff. What makes an antagonist and all of that is by far things that can go into once you start playing those. Into those, you can start that causes character conflicts and stuff like that.
Yep. Attack on Titan's another good example. No.
Attack on Titan, do you want to talk about counter motivations and
how long did it take us to find out what's in that basement? that they hinted the card the first episode, the first manga volume, And then, you know, hundreds later, we finally get to see what's actually all on that card. Now, that's a funny one, because I've mentioned this before, so those that have listened to us a while would probably have heard this a million times. I read the manga, and I also watched the show. And I think the show is a prime example of an adaptation that far excels at what the manga was doing. Not to say the manga is bad, because we wouldn't have the show without the manga. But the thing with the manga is it would have those cards and it would reveal them to you. And then it would point it in your face and have like 50 pages of long text just to say what's on that card. And you're like, I get it now. You don't have to keep showing me the card. Whereas I think the show does a better of kind of going, okay, here's the card. You're like, sweet. Going on. What's the next card? Here's the card. Sweet. Let's move on to the next one. And that's a fascinating thing about that particular world is he created a very interesting world that had a lot of things to kind of be slowly unraveled over time. So it's a good one.
Well, one of the like I was mentioning before, if there was ever a story that had motivations, counter motivations, conflict building upon conflict, and sometimes you're spun around so many times, you don't know who is the good guys and who is the bad guys. That's one of the things that by far Attack on Titan does in spades. When you start,
well, that's like, hair guy. I probably would decide that out, but there's a certain character that at some point just kind of turns and he had like this very screwed up, like PTSD about him, where he got so entrenched in being a spy that he lost himself. And it was so difficult for him to get back out of it. And it was way fascinating when it got in that kind of stuff. So, yeah. Let's see here. Promised Neverland. Again, watch the first episode. I'm not going to get into that one. It's too fresh. Moving on, we have Building World by Mechanics. Really cool one that I kind of immediately thought of when I thought of mechanics within the world itself. Was Padma Inverted. It's basically an upside-down world.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really cool element of kind of building that world, creating intrigue in it within it, based on that particular element was cool. Made in Abyss is another one. You're essentially, again, going into the Abyss, revealing the secrets within that uncharted area. Death Note, it technically is. It's kind of has element of a supernatural within it that does affect the roles within the world, which is cool as well. Mushishi, world of the Mushi, and how they affect people, affect villages, is really an intriguing aspect of that one. I always mention the one thing I always enjoyed about Mushishi is having that element where he'd go into an area, kind of reveal that something that they're dealing with is caused by a Mushi, how they can fix it, but then the people themselves don't want to fix it because they either are obsessed with the change that's happening or they actually like the change that's happening, not knowing that eventually it's going to cause them harm. It's kind of cool.
Mechanics is usually one of the things that tends to intrigue me the most when it comes to if you're going to go into a world build type story. This is like most of your isekais and your trapped in a video game world. Those tend to be the ones that do the best at that. Like Slime being one of the ones that I automatically think of really quickly.
Well, like ReZero.
ReZero is
a really cool mechanic within that world.
But the problem is that one, the only problem with that one so much was that it got kind of, that was the only thing that seemed to be that. And
but that was my argument with a lot of people was that and it's fine that people don't find as intriguing as I do, but it really did fascinate me that Subaru was an annoying character because Subaru was going through death over and over again, going through paranoia, and so that mechanic essentially created the development within him that was the crux of it.
Right, but when I think of exploring a mechanic, I'm thinking more along the lines of what are the different things that one mechanic can do, or those mechanics can do. Shield Hero, where he's constantly upgrading his shield throughout the course of the entire show, and he meets his two companions. those two having different things that they can do in their world. That's the more and more fleshed out the mechanics of the world become. I'm not saying that Subaru going through what he's going through as a repercussion of the mechanic.
Same argument. Emilia has her own mechanics. To her, the witch has its own mechanic.
Right.
Him and an inability for him to say what's happening to him are all elements of that. It's not just him dying and resetting. Using that reset to fix situations, forcing it, is kind of a...
I'm not downplaying it.
No, I'm kind of drawing the parallels with that and Shield Hero that you're explaining. Politics within a world that help it build character. So you have Spice and Wolf, essentially is a... It's a world that technically is very grounded, even though you do technically have a wolf or a harvest spirit with him at all times. But it very driven into the politics of being a merchant, doing trade, taxes, all those kind of things, governments, the different villages and all that kind of stuff is what was, even though at face value is very daunting and possibly boring, it was something that revisiting it was truly rewarding that I found in the end and absolutely loved it. So that time I got reincarnated as slime.
Mm-hmm.
Building his own nation. And that's what's funny about that one is that was like, it wasn't so much about building a nation. It was more of like, okay, now you have this thing you built, then you realize, oh, by the way, you're now technically the king of a nation, and people around you aren't going to like that you have this area of land, and they're going to want to know what you have, and bartering with them was the thing that I was kind of looking forward to, even though it technically took a kind of a side arc to go off into filling kids with spirits.
And the funny thing is that my automatic thinking was automatically going to what was the Mao-sama one where he did the very similar thing.
Demon Lord Retry.
And he was, whenever somebody would come against him, he was overpowered enough that he could pretty much go against that. The difference in Slime is they really very quickly showed, Slime is overpowered, but there is people who are more powerful than him. So they kind of did a reset on him.
They've only hit at two, technically.
they effectively pointed out an entire class that is more powerful than him. Mm. Not necessarily that there is only one or two or 50. Who knows how many there could be of those characters. So
he's just got to befriend one of them with candy and absorb them.
There you go.
Just not the cute girl. Don't absorb her. Other politic ones, Death Note. Not as much. It really is a lot into like the more police side and everything. Kino's journey is more, I would think, better example. Something like similar to Spice and Wolf, but every location she goes to is very different in how they're kind of ran and the hierarchy systems they have, the politics that they have, how things are run, what's within each location. So that's all I have. Any other world building elements for the character of a world besides mechanics, politics, and intrigue?
Well, we pretty much got it. Like I mentioned, I mean, like we were saying earlier, the cool thing about kind of the more shonen-y type shows is that they tend to have a little bit of all of this. And where they kind of get stuck is overly fleshing out world. And they may still be able to drag a character along the way, but what ends up happening is while they're dragging the world out and fleshing out the world, they tend to have to do character resets a lot. So a character will shift one direction, and then the character will almost like they're revamping the entire lesson again, and they'll have to learn that lesson again and again and again and again. Yeah. Naruto is a hard-headed kid all the way through the entire show. They constantly being brought down.
Believe it.
They're going to be as strong. He's going to be as strong as stronger than he was the last time. And he's going to keep redoing the entire thing. Natsu.
DBZ is like a prime example of that.
I was thinking Natsu. Natsu does it a lot. I'm gonna go and beat up everybody for whatever reason. He's gonna beat up everybody. Goku does the same thing.
Yeah, I think Natsu and Goku very similar. But it's funny because like every time Goku goes to another level, it's just that he changes color and he's more different. Whereas Natsu is just I inhaled a different type of flame that I don't think we should have eaten. Or different type of aura or smoke or something. He's going to inhale something that everybody's going to go, you probably shouldn't have inhaled that. But then he becomes overpowered and kills everything. No, he doesn't kill anything. Fairy Tail doesn't kill anybody. Sorry. Sorry. Don't give me the hate mail.
Except for one character, for whatever reason, they want to kill that character off really, really bad.
But I do agree with you. I think that it's a very difficult thing to deal with the shonens, and I think that's one of the bigger things that does kill it for me, or at least lately anyways. The thing that killed it for me for DBZ was just they're constantly having to get over, you know, he's having to over, you know, one-up himself. Like, every single arc is having to one-up itself. So now we're getting into basically the gods of destruction and creation, and it's getting god levels and everything, and everybody else is just there. They can't do anything. And they still drag him along like they're going to do something, but they can't because we're at god levels now. And I think the similar thing that happens with something like, Natsu, I guess, is an example, Naruto, is you keep introducing these new aspects and you kind of have to keep one up in yourself. But I think with the case with Naruto is it's like I do agree that technically they keep building that world more and more, and which does fascinate me, but at some point, it just kind of leaves the characters behind. And well, the more interesting question really does become is every time they do, like, go, let's get into this tribe or something like that, it's always a gamble because there's always going to be a new arc going into that new tribe. And if they leave the characters behind, you better hope that that arc is going to be really interesting and that new tribe or whatever is going to be very fascinating, because otherwise you have an entire arc that's going to be boring. Which I don't think they necessarily ever... I don't think the writer ever had a problem with that for me. I don't think I ever ran into a problem with that with Naruto. It was more of, the course, the filler, but that's filler.
Well, what I was going to get ready to say is what the character resets... They're always so flimsy. Because the character is always...
Huh? Like GT?
Well, GT is an animal all its own. I was actually talking about kind of like Bleach, where he wasn't supposed to use his Zanpakuto or something like that. Naruto wasn't supposed to use his the air
Rasengan, or whatever it was.
Rasengan, yeah. They make a point to say, and you know, why the mangaka put it in there. He wanted to kind of limit himself in some way, shape, or form. I can't use this because it's obviously way overpowered.
My Hero Academia can't use all for one for all because it literally breaks every single digit in his fingers and arms. And
well, I think was more because
he got an overpowered ability. He can't necessarily use it from day one. He's God Goku already. You can't just use God Goku right from volume one.
And that's kind of my point is Naruto pointing out the fact that he can't use that because it's way too overpowered.
Well, like the Ninetale Fox thing.
The Ninetale Fox. Himself. He can't do that. And the whole point of these things, the problem with them, the reason why I hate when they put these stupid blocks in there is because 500 episodes later, they're going, you're still wondering, why is he still using this stupid ability that in episode 44, he said that he can't use it anymore. It'll kill him because it's doing little itty bitty razor blade cuts all over his body.
That's the only one of the more frustrating aspects of, and not that it's frustrating, like I just completely shut it off. It's just kind of one of those things that you almost internally roll your eyes at it.
Right.
Is it's like every single one of these shows, a lot of the cases where you have an overpowered character is like, they got possessed by Tower of God. You got like this really insanely overpowered sword right from episode one. You have this ability within you, but you can never use it because you'll die. Or even with My Hero Academia, it was like, you can't keep doing this where you're breaking yourself because eventually I can't undo it, was the Of course, now they have the lolly battery, so it doesn't matter anymore. The Chew Girl is no longer needed. But yeah, there is a frustration there when you do have these kind of overpowering elements that always has this caveat. No, you can't use it too much or you'll die. And then five episodes later, they use it again. And you're like, no, you can't use that anymore. You're going to die. And then five episodes, they do it again because they have to use it every time. I mean, Sugimoto has that whole thing that you can't use that. You shouldn't use that. He keeps using it because it doesn't. The writer gets to choose when it's going to actually kill them. So it's okay. Anyways, that was a way side tangent. So with all of this being said, I want to go right back to the very beginning of the thing that completely caused this entire rabbit hole. Does a story have more difficulty to face when the characters are grown up? Even though I technically answered this already because we got right into it in the very beginning, but I want to revisit that.
In theory, yes. Mostly because you have to explain the characters' motivations, and that tends to be the hardest thing to explain because without actually having some way of, without doing a bunch of back flashbacks,
three episodes of backstory,
and explaining all the characters' motivations, why they decided that this is what the path that they're, you have to do it in some way, shape, or form. Now, what that ends up being, if like either the flashback or overly drawn out explanations of every character's motivations through text, or not text, but
inner dialogue
or chatting, while in the middle of a battle. Why are you doing this? Because I got to do this. That's stupid. So
you got your mind on shonens right now, big time. It's like every time you're trying to explain something. Oh, by the way, Dragon Ball Z. My mind's in Say Yesterday to Me or Sing Yesterday for Me because it's so recent, and it's like, and all of a sudden I don't know where you're talking about battle scenes and why did he do that? Well, because he wants to save the planet. No, I agree that I think the difficulty that a lot of them face is definitely getting to know the characters because they are such a painted portrait. So you're literally, again, going back to the example of young characters versus older characters, you have this with a younger character, literally episode one opens up. The canvas is pretty blank. Like, it might have a couple of slaps of paint on it, and you quickly grab it, but you're watching that painting happening as you're watching it. Whereas if you're watching a story about an adult, the painting's done, and you're going, okay, wait, hold on a second. I need to figure out where's the brush strokes? How do they brush stroke the head right here? Okay, so that's how this was created. Okay, cool. I got an idea of what he is, character. So you're actually having to study that portrait. And I think that becomes a challenge of the writer as well, is they have to figure out a way of telling how that painting was drawn without boring the hell out of you. And again, it's because it's very fresh in the mind. I think Sing Yesterday for Me is doing a great job of that because it's not really sitting there trying to, divulge everything right off the bat. I mean, they didn't technically have an entire episode just for the teacher and her backstory, but you kind of get an idea. He's very kind of stuck in his place. He's constantly talking about how he's stuck in his place. And then it's slowly kind of revealing the things that he's kind of gone through. And I think that's it's both the way that that story's told, but it's also difficulty in if the viewer will end up getting bored and not find it that interesting is the big struggle I think they have.
There's also a, like we had mentioned before, that Andrew was pointing out the quirks, but there's also a charm factor involved is kind of, you want to like that character. You want to, and adults, forgive me for saying it, in most cases, adults are standoffish in general, mostly because we are always on guard from whatever might be attacking us at any one point in time.
You got a knife, don't you? Sir, do you want that extra size burger and drink? Do you have a knife, don't you?
Kids on the opposite end of the spectrum, they are excited about exploring the world. They want to know what's in the world. That in itself tends to be an open, inviting character, and that in itself is a charm.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I would argue that when a show does adults right, they're like timeless. Like Shobugen Roku Rakushenju, I don't think I'll ever forget about that show because it was characters that were adults. Well, technically, it kind of does this whole thing where it wants to kind of show you, you know, the early stage of their life, but it's not that much time. Most of it is actually in their adulthood, and it's in their, you know, way adulthood, their elderlyhood. And it's fascinating to have a story like that, that when it works out, it's like, that was a phenomenal story. You actually pulled that off.
One of the cool things about what Shōgen Roku did, if you remember, the first episode, we actually thought it was a different character who was the main character. Now, one of the cool things about what that show did was it sold the main character to you with the alternate character. And if you think about it, the main character is, I can't think of his name at the moment.
Kiko?
I know Kiko.
What was his
name? He's not a character that you easily take to very quickly because he's very quiet. Not a character that
early on he's like a grumpy old man.
Yeah, he's a grumpy old man. You don't want to have nothing to do with him, and you add in this kind of fun, overly rambunctious, mischievous character. Add him in there to sell the main character to you because, in theory, you're not going to like him. And you're not really technically supposed to like him. But it is he is the main character, and you need to like him at some point, and you end up being sold that main character, and you end up eventually realizing, oh, hey, this has been about him the entire time.
But I think that's the frustrating thing, is that even though, like I said, when a show does pull off adult characters and it does it fantastically, they're gems. Like Shōgen Roku Rakushenju, it's like, what else? And it's like, all I can think of with adult characters is that usually they're shows that have to be a detective story. It has to be an action story. It's never about just adult living. And that's the kind of troubling thing, even though, again, we totally laid out a long explanation of why that is. That's exactly why you don't see much of it, and that's the unfortunate thing, is it's like you can't – it's so difficult for them to write – for most to write an adult story. And again, I do acknowledge the fact that Shōgen Rokugu is technically an entire lifetime. 95% of it was technically adulthood and onward.
Yeah.
And that's – the interesting thing is, I guess technically something like March Comes Like a Lion. March Comes in Like a Lion is technically in his college years, university years, so it's a little pretty close to adulthood. But it is sad to realize that not many of them are not comedies or action shows that have adults in them. And maybe I'm probably going to finish this up and probably go, damn, I forgot about that one, or dang, I forgot about this one. But that's the sad thing about it, and I think that's the whole problem. I guess you could say it's a problem with anime, but I think I could also argue that the same case with Western media and all the stuff that I've ever really seen. It's either a rom-com or it's an action show. If it's got, you know, adults, it's very rarely about non-romance or comedy or action. It's never about just working or, yeah, there's a lot of parenthood stuff, which I guess that's another one to kind of throw in there. Have Wolf Children, Bunny Drop. Those are technically adults that are not action-y or something like that. So it always ends up being really good if it's actually done right. So next question. Does a story face more drop-off when the cast are already matured and have little to grab you? Easier to lose you when they're more mature and have little to grab you as the characters, the cast themselves.
Me personally, yes. But it's not necessarily a fault of the writer. That's probably more just me personally, mostly because like I said, I'm when it comes to certain shows, I am absolutely grasping at straws. I will use anything to have an excuse to want to watch a show. That's one of the things that, like, Kato, I was desperately grasping at this random off character that was off to the side, and Andrew's like, she's like the least interesting character in the show. I need somebody. Give me something. Because the alien, I didn't care about the alien. I didn't care about the detective. So the detective's kind of love interest was like, I like her. So yeah, I do desperately need somebody that has a bit of personality to give me a reason. Like I said, with Shogun Roku, literally, when I finally figured out what they had done, they did literally a bait and switch on that show, and I absolutely praise it for doing that.
Immediately went to my mind was the Pot I Run Ma thing. Watching this show, and then out of nowhere, this main character just suddenly opens his mouth, and it's a guy, and Chris is like shattered. The only possible female character, and it's a dude.
That was at the very beginning. I was like, okay, what the heck?
It was funny because
not necessarily that I was expecting it, but I thought it was a female character in the
because I think when we did the PV in the preview for the season, it was like, oh, the girl's character artwork's interesting or something like that. And so yeah, it was great. The moment that voice came out, I was like, shock. No, I think that this goes back to, again, to the whole discussion on the idea of, okay, if the show opens up and the characters are kind of already set in their ways, they've matured, there has to be something there to grab. And unless that story that it's telling has intrigue, the world itself has some type of mechanic within it that's going to really grab me, it's very difficult, because what is at the forefront of the show pretty much 99% of the time? It's going to be the characters' faces. It's going to be their expressions. It's going to be their dialogue, their explanation about what's happening, their experience about what's happening. And if you see a character that's not really fazed by it, they've already been through this before. Say it is, you know, going back to the whole fairy gone, it's a war-torn character that's been through hellish fights. They're not going to respond to things very interestingly. They're just going to go, okay, well, that happened, move on. Unless you have, like, crazy action scenes that make it fun, it's not going to grab you. And I think that's the whole drop-off point that I make, is that it's got to do something without those characters. And it's, again, very difficult to pull that off. It's very rare it happens. Again, Kyle the Right Answer is a prime example for me. But I keep bringing up Kyle the Right Answer because it's few and far between when you run into a show where it's like, oh, I don't really care about the characters. What's happening over here? Like, the character's in the middle of the screen, but you're looking over off in the direction to see what's happening because that world's so fascinating. And so, yeah, I think it's very difficult. Do storytellers often avoid adult stories because they have very little to build on those characters? I think we've, again, talked that to death, but do you have any additional points to add to that question?
I don't necessarily think that it's a motivation of it so much as it's just when if you just sit down to go and write a story, you're not necessarily going, I'm going to write a story about adults and my adult characters are going to be mundane and sit in a house and they're going to play jacks, and it's going to be the most fascinating game of jacks ever. That's not how people go to
sounds
write a story.
Sounds like an anime. They'll make any game probably super pull it exciting. Off. They made pressing a button for a quiz show exciting and insane.
The funny thing is when you write, it's kind of like an itch, and I don't know if anybody has ever heard that kind of coin before, but it is kind of like that. You kind of just get this inkling of, I'm going to write this story, and then you just start writing it. And at least it is for me. I want to say Stephen King, I think, no, he writes similar to the way I write. Somebody else, I read a breakdown on the way that they write, and they were absolutely talking about how they do an entire outline on the everything that these kind of points along the storyline that they have to reach. And I'm like, that would absolutely ruin me. I could not possibly write like that. To me, it's...
So it's a difference of building as you go or versus outlining it and sticking to a schedule.
Yes. To me, that's too rigid. You can't move off of that. To me, it's a flow. This is the story that I have to tell, and that's the story that I'm going to tell. Am I going to have at some point a conflict of what are the plot holes? Probably. I can explain a plot hole. That makes perfect sense to me. I'm writing a story. I'm not worried about what happened way back in episode one. I'm writing the story that's all the way over here.
Yeah.
Somebody who's rigid and writes an outline would probably never have. I'm sure Guinovici probably has outlines upon outlines of everything he's ever written. That's not the way I write.
Yeah. I think that's a fascinating thing is that, I don't know if I mentioned it here before, but one way that I help with sleep, like just to get myself to sleep so I don't think about things or think about my job or just riddle my head with things that I need to take care of the next day, is I kind of make my mind go blank and I basically play out. I imagine a story. And it's funny because there's I can probably think of several of them that have kind of stories that I've technically gone through in my head to just make myself go to sleep, which is really difficult because the next day when you go to sleep again, you have to kind of remember the last thing that you remember thinking about before you went to sleep the prior day and start playing it out. And then you realize, oh wait, I've already played this part out already. And I think I have the current one that I'm doing is like, it's probably a good, I've been probably doing that one for probably 4 months now.
Why don't you write it down?
Because they're usually based off an anime or just my own desire that I wanted a story to go in what direction.
So write it down anyway.
But it's funny because it is one of those things where, like, the current one I'm doing is pretty much a reverse isekai. It's a person from a magical world that's taken to a modern world that has a hidden side of it that is semi-fantasy. And it is like that. It is never, again, of course, I'm doing this as I'm laying in my bed. It's not like I'm writing an outline of it. It is more fun and interesting to write that story out as I go along. And yeah, I'm thinking about it now. It's like, I wonder if I did have any plot holes at some point because I'm literally this far into it. And I've probably completely forgotten to how it started. So it is definitely probably something
on your own. You would be brutal on your own show.
And I think
this plot hole? Yeah.
This character's so tropey.
It is. I think that is one of those things where if I ever did become a writer, I think it's nice to do both. I think it would be nice to do both. Like because I know there's a lot of writers that will do multiple stories at the same time. If they have a sudden thought when they're at the dinner table, they're probably going to scribble down a brain dump right then and there. A lot of people will actually, when they go write, I've heard, I don't know who it was, but they will mind dump on a typewriter or whatever.
And then Stephen King does that. That's what I was talking about.
It's not necessarily a mind dump of what they're writing about. They just mind dump onto a paper and then they go back to writing their current story.
It's like a warm-up. Yeah, there's a term
maybe
for
it was Alan
that.
Wake. Maybe it was from Alan Wake.
it's very possible because it is a common thing. You're supposed to do 1,000 words a day, and if you get the inspiration, immediately shift over to writing your book. But the trick is to always every day do 1,000. I wish I did that. I really need to start doing it.
Anyways, destroy sellers often avoid dull stories. Let's see here. And the last one I have is, do younger characters make for easier storytelling because they are so dynamic at their young age?
I pretty much hit that. Yes, absolutely. Mostly because, like I said before, the innocence, the blank canvas, the potential for growth. Yeah, just a lot of things that the rigidity is not as they're not as rigid of characters. So yeah, there's massive different things that
I think it's also play. You know, I think it's also easy because they technically they're more believable if they decide to change face really quickly, like because yeah, technically younger people are more willing to accept something and go that other route. They're more willing to try out something or go off the beaten path. They're more willing to tell their parents, look, you know, this is the way you want it, but I think this is a cool way of going about it. I'm going to try this. And again, like going back to the whole discussion about adults, they're more, they've gone through those trials. They've done the testing and that they're at this point and this is where they decided to be at.
It doesn't, there is an aspect to the older characters that is also good as well. The seasoned warrior is automatically something that I automatically think of is, they have a story to tell that's already been written. And that is a fascinating thing in itself. Just like Andrew was talking, the main crux of this, the world itself has a story to tell. It's in the background and you have to explore it. A seasoned warrior is the same thing, or a, wizened, you know, the older characters that you have a reason to go to those characters and find out what they have hidden in the background. Those are characters in themselves that are interesting to delve into. But the problem is that you have to find a way to explore the character while telling the story that you're going to tell as well.
Yeah, I guess the easy way to button it up is that a younger character is going to be a story about finding purpose, and the older character is going to be a story about protecting or living that purpose, I guess. Or losing that purpose, protecting that purpose, fighting for that purpose. A lot of action shows are about protecting that purpose or getting revenge for that purpose, or nurturing that purpose. So I would argue that to kind of play the devil's advocate, the only thing that problem with the younger characters is that it's going to be often more overly familiar stories. Whereas I think there's a possibility of an adult having a story that, and again, this is going based on the idea of the mini anime we've watched, that they technically do fall within those same molds. And again, shows like Shogun Rokugaku Senju, Wolf Children, Bunny Drop, those more adult stories are the ones that end up being more, I guess, off the beaten path and really does intrigue me because it's different. It's not always about, you know, kid finding love or kid going to school or whatever, things like that. So, yep. That's it. That is, that was a lot longer podcast than I thought it was going to be based off the first few minutes of it. It's always funny because he's outlining. It's like you do, like, you know, several bullet points, and you're like, this is only 8 minutes in, so this is not going to be a long podcast. So we managed to pull an hour out of it, which is great. Anything else on character building and character bonds? Anything you want to see in the future? More of? What would you like to see more in the future of either characters or worlds or both?
I think there should be more shonens. I want more shonens.
There's plenty of shonen.
We've pointed this out before. If there's nothing else that you get from us other than this, is there's a reason why shonens work so well. They tend to have all of the things that we're talking about in this. They have the world. They have the characters. They have factions, they have the mechanics, they have all this crap in spades.
Well, it's funny because that technically is by design. Like, these are kind of things they're building on the idea that they'll become super serialized and ongoing for a long time. It's almost like they bring out this big, gigantic canvas and stick it in front of the mangaka and say, it's time to, you know, get serialized. So have a concept, start it out, and expect it to go for a long time versus, you know, somebody that does a short-running series within, you know, one section of a manga, they're probably going for, yeah, I'm going to probably get a good 12 volumes out of this at the most. Whereas I think those other ones are more like, they're constantly seeking something that you can build, and they start from day one on the idea that what they're creating could possibly be the next Naruto. It could possibly be the next Dragon Ball Z, Black Clover, One Piece story.
The funny thing is, sometimes you wonder, like, I don't believe Bleach was originally intended to become what it became. I don't think that it was intended. There is what they've got, the King's Court, they've got the Quincy's.
Oh, I do agree that by, you know, the third arc, it felt like, okay, let's keep this going. But that's similar to everything else. It's like Attack on Titan. At some point in Attack on Titan, I'm like, yeah, you guys, you weren't expecting to get this far, were you? You were just expecting to get to the basement, weren't you?
Yeah, you were planning on getting to the basement.
No, I think it was the point where they really kind of opened up the outer area. And then it was like shortly after that suddenly it was like, yeah, you weren't planning on this, were you? And again, that's again the thing that I'm really hoping the anime will fix. Are they going to be able to, again, they did a lot of foreshadowing already. Will they be able to tell that story better? Because, yeah, I think with everything, you do get to a certain point where you're like, either the writer is really creative and hiding the fact that you are just kind of going at the seat of your pants at this point, or it really does feel like this doesn't really feel like it fits this show. Like, you're trying to change things up on the spot. And, yeah, I do believe, even though I love Bleach to death, it feels like that a lot.
There's an aspect.
I don't think ever had that problem.
There's an aspect. I think I would agree with you on that. Mostly because Naruto always felt like the end game was the goal. Now there,
that's the sad thing, is that the end game thing was not my driving force. I hated the whole. I guess the Naruto and Sasuke thing. It was like, oh, you're bringing that up again. I really don't care about that right now. There's a ninja war happening right now. I don't care about your stupid little... You have to have your duel. I don't care.
Well, the funny thing about that, and I'm talking about the final in game, and it's so weird, yeah. Because I do think if I was to say any part of that was didn't feel like it belonged, it would be the guy who had the eyes. He did not feel like he belonged in the story. When they started finally digging into him and putting him up against Booby Lady, he did not feel like he belonged in the story. And if I was to say anybody or any part of that story did not really belong, it was probably him. Now, it eventually went back onto the main path to the end, but that's outside of the realm of it. That's the only part that I would say didn't feel like it belonged.
I think if I could counter to that, to your original statement about wanting more shonen-based ones, there's basically stories that are more longer running and more, I guess, fleshed out worlds, is it's a two-sided coin for me, because on one side, I like that idea just because whenever it works really well. But at the same time, on the other side, I've been burned too many times where I think something's going to be fascinating. I'm afraid to get into it because I'm afraid that, you know, 15 cores into it, I'm going to burn off and fall off of it. Or there's the other aspect of it that I sometimes think that, granted, single core shows are often just like the first few volumes of a manga or something like that and are never the full story. But when you do have something that is a short story and doesn't feel like it's trying to lead you into a longer story, it's so much more bite-sized and enjoyable because you get that quick story and you're done. So it's a mixed bag. I think a lot of that has to do with my fear of things ever continuing. Like, it, you have so many shows that are technically long running and shonen based, but they only get like one or two cores and then you never see it again. So it's like, it's only these rare cases of shows like Naruto. It's more the norm that they don't get, you know, 15 cores to them.
Yeah.
It's more the norm that they only get one. And if it doesn't work and the manga doesn't take off, they'll never see the face of anime ever again. And that's my viewpoint, because I don't read Shonen Jump. I don't read the mangas and stuff like that, unless it's something that is really
well, grabbing. And the funny thing is, like, Yu-Gi-Oh! And what's that other one that's effectively working out really well too? The stupid card battlers. Those are, I understand why they work, because those ones are really character driven, and I guess they have the world mechanics and stuff like that. Basically, they're just using the cards as the card, the world mechanic.
Pikachu's.
And Pikachu's, yeah, Pokemon as well.
Charizards.
It's funny to see how well those do when you compare them to the others, and it's a fascinating, because they do have the ultimate quest system, where it's kind of starts out as just a card tournament, and then suddenly Yu-Gi-Oh's off into some world weird world where he's having to battle the king of the cards, or whatever the guy's name is.
But Kaiba. Was it Kaiba?
Kaiba? No, he's the other guy, isn't he?
Wasn't that his rival, Kaiba?
Yeah, his rival.
I wasn't sure if that was the big bad guy or not.
No, the big bad guy is Yugi. No, he's Yugi, and the other guy... I can't remember.
I didn't watch much of it. I just see a lot of jokey memes and stuff. I guess the last thing that I would really kind of like to discuss, if possible. I don't know if you will follow me on this.
Oh. Sorry. Another.
Oh, I thought you finally remembered the guy's name.
No. Another thing to, not just shonens, but shoujos do this a lot too. Sailor Moon does this wonderfully. Characters has the world, has the mechanics, has factions, all that stuff, all thrown in. It does that as well. So this is not just a shonen thing. It does carry over to the other side as well.
Magical girls. Other than that, it's just romance. It's not very often you get shoujos that are not magical girls and not about romance. I mean, you do have things like Skip Beat and stuff. So it's not, again, that Skip Beat's another adult based story, but again, that's more, there's a little bit more comedy and romance in there, though. But again, didn't get much of it.
But they did it and pull off the factions and the not so much world, but in a way, they used the industry as the world, something to explore, and at the same time, give you a motivation to go forward and everything like that.
Yeah, the other thing that I kind of wanted to hit on, and again, hopefully you can kind of relate on it, is experiences with characters that, again, I kind of put Bond in the title of this, but I really didn't have much Bond, but other than the fact that, you know, relating to the characters that we discussed about before, but cases where a show really did grab you based on relating with the characters extremely well. And again, I've mentioned before to those that have listened to this podcast that Hanasaki Rojas is, I think, still technically my favorite anime of all time, because it was in a time of my life where I felt like I needed to find something better to do as a job. And one of the main key aspects of that show was this girl that gets, you know, basically shipped off to her grandmother and living in an inn, and she finds enjoyment about what she does. And at the time that I was watching it, I had that same desire to find something that I wanted to do with my life. And granted, I'm not really technically there anymore. It's like one of those things where it connected and bonded to me with extreme feeling of relation to the character and what they're going through. And it created like an insane amount of bond to that character. Like, she can go through whatever she's going through. Granted, I didn't go through being tied up by some guy based on a storytelling that he was doing, but you get where I'm going with it. And I wasn't sure if you had any cases of something like that where you, not necessarily that you had to, you know, relate to everything a character was going through, or maybe a certain point in the character is dealing with.
I would say yes, but probably not to the extreme that you're going on. But yes, I have had characters that I just absolutely fall in love with and just absolutely wanting to see everything that this character has to deal with, and then trying to understand how I would face that same situation, whether I would disagree with the character on how they deal with it or what. But yeah, I off the top of my head, particular shows, not necessarily.
It's funny because I think a lot of shows that we do actually really do enjoy, and it's funny because it's the whole aspect of like the moe kawaii stuff, cute girls doing cute things. I think a lot of that aspect of bond to those characters is in the aspect of like, I want to protect this, I want it to smile, and I want it to have fun, because it's almost like a parental kind of instinct that gets into you. Like Hitori Bochi, that entire show is literally Protect the Smile, the anime. Like, you want to see her. She's such a klutz, and she's pushing herself, and you're constantly going, you have to do it, you have to make it, and you're cheering her on because you have,
we
like...
didn't forget you, baby like girl, it's parent. Okay.
it's like you didn't birth this kid. It's almost like you're adopting them, and you're outside the door looking in the classroom, and you're going... Gambatte, you know, like, you could do it. You could do it. It almost drives you into that, like, you know, parental position, or that adopted parent guardian position that you want to, you know, cheer them on, which is kind of funny. And I think that's the case with a lot of like the cute girls doing cute things types of show. It almost makes you feel like you're sitting there rooting them on, and you want them to be happy, and you want to protect the smile kind of thing. So when they do go south and it turns into Higurashi when they cry, you are upset.
Please don't put Hitori Bochi in. And,
no, Bochi
Des. And when they cry, it's the same time.
Bochi Des. Why do you have a bat? Bochi Des.
Run, baby girl, run.
She wasn't very athletic. I don't think she'd pull it off.
She's going to have to be.
But I think that's the case with a lot of the shows, is, and it's funny because it's partly, yeah, there's technically, and I remember when the other day I was in here, I wasn't sure if Chris was going to come here to watch shows, so I started watching Shelter again, which I absolutely still love, and it still needs to be put on Blu-ray. I don't care if it's only like, you know, a music length long Blu-ray. I want it on Blu-ray just so I can have it forever. But I remember one of the criticisms of that particular short back when it released was, there was, again, I'm not saying this is a full scale thing, I think I've seen like one person say this, but one criticism I read was saying the only reason that people love this so much and are crying over it is because the character's cute. And it's like, yeah, I guess. I mean, it there again is that aspect of like immediate bond. Immediately you have a feeling of, this is a child and you want this child to be happy. I mean, I don't necessarily say that. I don't necessarily want to say that if the character was any different looking, that I would suddenly go, I don't feel sorry for this kid and the fact that she's remembering her father. There is, again, a feeling of relation there. If you have a parent or something like that, you're going to feel that same relation, that relation of isolation and loss. But I think it is a credit to a lot of shows. And yeah, in some cases it is because, say, the girl in Grimgar Fantasy, yeah, she loved her to death. She looks way cute. Probably the reason why I grabbed her so much. It was more some of her dialect and how she kind of handled herself that was more of the aspect of bonding. But characters themselves having either a quirk, a feature, their appearance, thick thighs, I guess, these different aspects are what kind of bond you to them initially, and I think it's when you do see them going through things is when you kind of solidify that bond to them.
Okay. So you're going to tell me, I'm sorry, that just irritated the crap out of me. What? Are you going to tell me, okay, let's do the easy one. Is it a Shota? Would you still kind of tear up over the story? Yeah. If it was a young lady, would you still tear up over this? Yeah, probably. If it was a young man, would you still tear up? Probably not as quickly, but you would still, because you would
if it was a solid built adult man, you would not until you've seen him cry.
Now, I'm getting to a point here, okay? If it was a kitten, I think
the argument was that if it was a chubby girl that had her face, you would suddenly not like it.
That's where I was going to get to is, okay, if it was a kitten, yeah, you'd still tear up. If it was a puppy, you'd still tear up. Okay, cuteness, fine. Let's go the opposite direction. A grumpy old man goes out and, I hate this little newfounded technology, and starts hitting the iPad. Are you gonna tear up? Probably not. I mean, come on, people. What at what point do you want? I mean, I'm not saying it, the story itself was the story. The point of it was this person who had been separated from all of humanity. There is a stuck in space. Her entire life is dedicated and stuck in a virtual machine for however long she exists. She's alone.
A lot of it was because she never knew what she was and where she was. It was a fact that when she realizes what she had and what she lost was the emotional thing. It just poured into her. And that was the point of it.
You can't sit there and just go, well, if it was a fat old lady, you wouldn't cry. Come on, dude. I mean, serious. If there was ever a troll statement I've ever heard, that would be it. I mean, come on. That is the difference between humanity and being just a butt. I'm sorry.
Just set Chris off, didn't
I? That irritated the crap out of me.
I'm not discounting the idea that a cute character or a quirky character doesn't grab you faster. I'm not gonna argue against that. The first appearance attractiveness of a character is a grabber.
It's not.
But I'm not saying that is the reason why something is successful or not. If a character isn't that appealing, the writer can still tell the story that makes the character appealing.
That's what I was getting ready to say. The whole sequence was about its storytelling. It's not even really about the music. I mean, I think that was a visual artistry in itself. That was a story that was told via visuals. The sound just set the mood. It was a phenomenal story. Just like the one where the girl is makes friends with her chair. That was strictly visual. It had no real
context.
And yet you could tell that this was a story about a little girl and her. I mean, didn't she become an old lady at some point during the story? Or am I thinking of it? Or was that the cat one? The point of the story is not necessarily whether or not it's a cute character or not. It's a visual storytelling. This is the story from here to here. If you don't like the story, sorry. I think you're a little cold-hearted, but because I think that was a message about humanity rather than it was about just a little cute little girl.
Okay. You okay?
I'm fine. I got it out of my system.
Well, I mean, that's just like Shogun Roku.
Yeah.
It's not like I find that. I mean, yeah, technically, Kiko, I mean, he's a charming man when he was younger. That was the whole point of him. But and if I was a lady, I would probably find him very attractive, but not like I wanted to bang him. And the supporting characters.
He made me cry.
characters that I completely fell in love with, not for the same reasons. So, I mean, that's the easy argument against it. It's like there's plenty of stories that I can show you that are complete opposites of that.
Characters just that watch are, somebody that the person that actually wrote that is probably to us. We get some hate mail.
thirsty boys. But yeah, it's anyways, totally blew up this conversation with that, bringing that up. Sorry. I will never bring up Shelter ever again. Anyways, that's
got
that's
20 it. Minutes out of me just ranting about Shelter.
Hope you guys enjoyed this little run through about character building and bonding, whether it's characters or world characters. I don't know how I'm going to title that, because I really never decided on how I'm going to title it. We're at AtakuSpirit.com. You can go there for all of our anime, new and old, great community, the form, links, stop, social media links to the right side, and all that good stuff. And we hope you guys enjoyed, and y'all take care.
Oss!